Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Mean Green Nation podcast, and what a beautiful Sunday it is. It's always a great day after a Mean Green win. And let me tell you what, it's always a little bit more special after a win over UTSA, especially in the Dome, right? Many of you know I'm a San Antonian, right? So it's always a little extra nice to see my favorite college football team get a win in the Alamo Dome, you know? Dream come true, I guess. It's the first win for North Texas in the Alamo Dome after going 0-2, lost in 2014 in a very similar game to this one, because that season both teams didn't have good offenses, right? Both teams had some struggles, and then UTSA just all of a sudden exploded with some offense. Andrew McNulty had one of his best games ever. I think that lends some credence to the idea that this little series is something like a rivalry. I talked about this on the post and then on Twitter. In the six games between these two schools, five of them have come down to the last possession, or like near the last effective possession. Because like last year, that was the last drive, right? 98 yards, win the game, basically. Like UTSA had like 5 seconds left to try to do like a kick return, but you know what I'm saying. So 2013. That was a gut punch game. I don't know if a lot of people remember the details, but North Texas had the ball down 21-13, and Derek Thompson drove North Texas all the way down to the end zone, and the ball was intercepted in the end zone, or like right near it. It would have needed to have been a touchdown and an extra point and a 2-point conversion, but final drive, right? Okay, interception. 2014, North Texas forces a stop. Down 7, UTSA punts the ball, and Zach Whitfield inadvertently touches the ball, so UTSA recovers, and we can't even get the final drive. But that was the opportunity for the final drive, final possession. 2015 DeMarcus Smith game, right? He ran for like 169. Jeff Wilson ran for like 160 something. You know, it was ridiculous. 1-2 punch running the ball. But UTSA had the ball down a score, and the defense came up huge, stopped them on fourth down, won the game. 2016 was the only game that didn't have a final possession kind of deal. But that one was a close game, right? And it was a lot of turnovers. Mason Fine turned the ball over 3 times. Jeff Wilson fumbled at the goal line. It was like 14-7 at one point. It was not really ever a game that was just like a blowout, but UTSA pulled away in the fourth quarter. It was kind of back and forth throughout the game. 2017, obviously, that was the famous, Mason Fine drive, the drive, the miracle at Apogee, as I like to call it. And, this year, final possession, defense comes up big. Wins 24-21 on the rivalry weekend. It's like we're like the only people there. It was pretty empty. I don't know what the official attendance numbers are, but I got to say that they're going to be exaggerated. I mean, I know I bought 7 tickets because I was anticipating bringing a couple friends over. They had some last-minute change of plans, so they didn't come. So that attendance is going to be slightly inflated, you know? Things like that. Good times. It was fun. It was fun doing a little tailgate out there with some friends and family. And I went to the alumni tailgate. A lot more muted than it was in 2016 when there was I think North Texas was coming off the win against Army, and everybody was feeling a little bit excited. Like, things could happen. Things are happening here, right? We're pretty good. We can get another win. Who knows what's going to happen? We can probably beat this team. This time it was more just kind of chill. Like, yeah, well, it's cool. It's great to see this team. How's it going? If you were at the game and you saw the dude with wearing the giant like Christmas hat, red hat, that was me. That was a Mean Green Nation. No Aldo today because he had his Friendsgiving up in Denton, and I think he's recovering from that. So it's just me, folks. It's just me on this Sunday. So let's get down to it. We are number one, happy with the win. Number two, slightly concerned with the way it happened. But we are pretty reserved in the knowledge that this is the team already, right? This is the team's 9-3. That's 12 games played, and like 4 weeks of preseason practice. Right, this is the team it's going to be. We can't really expect some surprise revelation here. Now that you could say, well, UTSA jumped out there and they were a lot different. It's easier to improve from bad to decent, and it's easy to improve or to regress from good to bad. It's hard to go from good to great in just one moment in one game in the final portion of the season. And there's something to be said about consistency, and Seth Luttrell has his team playing consistent. And, that's the first step, and then you can try to get to another plateau. One, you got to get everybody playing on the same pace, right? So let's talk a little bit about this game. We'll break it down thusly. We'll talk about the win, what it means, and then we'll go into, the different facets of it. So the win means nine wins. Nine wins on the season. 9-3. Last year, was it 9-5? Is that what the final record was? Back-to-back nine-win seasons for the first time since 1978. And, That's an accomplishment, especially at a place like North Texas that has, quite obviously, limited sustained success over a period of time, right? I think I saw the UNT provided game notes say that this was the first back-to-back conference winning season since the Daryl Dickey days. That's an accomplishment. That's a big time thing. And I think the people that were living through the Dickey days and the good parts, you're thinking this is only going to get better. And then, it proceeded to get very bad. And we entered one of the worst periods of North Texas history. And a pretty solid to decent, history. Not a lot of amazing things, but you know the periods. The Hayden Fry years, there was some middle ground there where it was just a lot of middling but some good moments. The Daryl Dickey years, right? Back, four Sun Belt titles, four Sunbolt, bowl game appearances at the New Orleans Bowl. And then it was a whole lot of nothing, right? Very bad. And you started longing for the days when you could just be mediocre. It was bad, laughing stock bad, setting defensive records in the worst way bad. And so hiring Dan McCarney was a return to normalcy. Whatever you think about Dan McCarney, he holds a special place in the Mean Green Nation heart because he righted the ship, right? And sort of laid the foundation, And he brought in some talent. He coached up some talent. He got some wins. And he won the first bowl game, and really the only bowl game since the Daryl Dickey years, right? That 2013 win, 2014, technically, but the 2013 team that won that bowl game is the last North Texas team to win a bowl game, right? Seth Luttrell, it's got them to three of them, but it's gone over. And obviously this year's hasn't been played yet. So that's important. It's important to know the history, what's going on right now. Nine wins is important. We saw Mason Fine produce another excellent day. What do you have, 320 yards passing? He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in North Texas history, if not the greatest quarterback in North Texas history. He's the greatest. And, he put on a show today when he had time and when he could find some receivers. And it was nice to see, especially since the last time I saw him play at the Alamo Dome, he's throwing interceptions. You can see where he was going to be, but you could see, that he had room to improve. Now he looks like he has it all figured out. He's at the peak of his powers, as they say, master of his position at this point in time. And he's going to get better, but going from junior to senior is a little different. The game slows down for you a little bit, but so much is under, outside of your control. And also, I think there can be a drop-off that you got to guard against, right? Just because you're like, I got to figure it out. I'll just kind of do the same thing, and then I'll be fine. And then you kind of see some senior years, regress a little bit. I don't think that's going to happen in his case because he's such a hard worker, and he's always working on his game. So I'm excited to see what the next year has in store. It's gonna be great. But an excellent year for Mason Fine. Threw another couple touchdown passes. You can see he has some room to improve. Let's not overpraise him, I guess, right? He did throw an interception, and I think he kind of badly overthrew his guy. He's gonna beat himself up about that. But yeah, okay. That's great time. DeAndre Torrey, It's a weird thing rooting for him running so well right now. It's because he's putting up some Jeff Wilson type numbers, right? 145 a couple weeks ago. What do you have last week? 100 and I forget. But then he had another 155 today. He's balling out and he's scoring touchdowns. I mean, he's exactly what we thought he could be when we were looking at the recruiting rankings and thinking about his fit in this offense. He can catch the ball. He's explosive. And he's running hard. I think maybe something a little bit has clouding our judgment of him is the performance in short yardage. And that's not really his game. You know, he's not a short yardage dude. And right now we don't have a short yardage line. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But another great day for DeAndre Torrey. Actually, let me pull up his stats real quick. So he didn't play too much in the beginning of the season, right? I think the game against Incarnate Word, he had the most carries, and the run game was still kind of working itself out. But you can see why he fell to second on the depth chart behind Lauren Easley. So I think he had 16 carries against Incarnate Word for only 44 yards, but he had the three scores, right? He didn't top over 100 yards until the Rice game when he had 130, but he did have 95 against Southern Miss. Pretty solid outing in that one, in the three scores. But since the Rice game, 15 carries, 130 yards, three scores. Old Dominion, 25 carries, 145, two scores. Florida Atlantic, 17 carries, 184, and a score. UTSA, 24 carries, 155 yards, and a score. 14 rush TDs on the season. He's on various lists. I think he tied Jamario Thomas with 17 total. I thought somebody had 19. Or 18. That was the record. But I guess it's 17. He's balling. He's playing well. And it reminds me a little bit of Lance Dunbar. Because you remember Lance Dunbar just kind of came in for, was that Montgomery? Cam Montgomery. Like three or four games into the season. And, you know, he had like two carries for 155 yards. Just burst on the scene. You're like, we need to get that guy some more carries. And then just the same kind of deal until he was the star running back and we just give him the ball all the time. Something like that is kind of happening here. I mean, was it four straight games with 100 yards rushing? And they're not just like 101, 102. He's averaging, I mean, can't do the math here, but 8, 5, 10, and 6 yards per carry per game in each of the last four games. He's balling out right now, guys. 5.85 on the season, 942 yards rushing. He is 60 yards away from a 1,000-yard season. Did not expect that from him. I thought maybe Nick Smith would do that, but it's clearly DeAndre Torrey. He's explosive, and he's fun to watch. So good game from him. Good stuff from the offense overall. 516 total yards, 196 rush yards. 320 pass yards. This is the North Texas offense. This is the Seth Petrel offense that, you know, we were sold when he came in here. We knew it was going to be air raid, and it has been. But we also knew that he wanted to emphasize the run game. And in modern college football, you know, you can run the ball, but you're not going to line up in power sets with a fullback. You need some of the backs that can handle the ball in open space, right? And he's been able to do that. DeAndre Torrey is more of a fit for this offense than I think some of the past running backs we've had, in North Texas history. But he's good. That's my point. That's what I'm trying to make here. Overall, good day. I think red zone wasn't amazing, even though they were 3-for-3. 17 red zone points, one touchdown, one pass, and one field goal. Right? Nobody likes a field goal in the red zone, although, you know, you take it if you can get it. But I think North Texas is at the place when you say, hey, we kicked a field goal, that is a loss, right? It's not winning football. You want touchdowns. And when you have an explosive running back, when you have a quarterback like Mason Fine, you feel like you should be getting touchdowns. And so I think that's why some people feel a little disappointed about that, right? But overall good day, in the red zone. I think the three failed runs at the 1 yard line and the field goal really made that whole endeavor pretty souring. But again, quality. Third downs, 11 third down attempts, 6 conversions, 54% for North Texas. UTSA was held to 41%. By the way, North Texas was 2 of 4 on third and longs. That's like 9 plus. and 1 of 1 on 3rd and 1s, and 3rd and goal 0-1. We know that one. Solid day throwing a ball. I think there was a couple holding penalties that put them in longer than they should have been, but they came out and they were able to execute and move the ball, and that's what you like from this offense. You don't like that they only scored 24, but Mason Fine threw an interception in the end zone, right on one, and there was the, you know, the kind of failed 3rd and 1. I feel like you had the 1 yard line, you should get a touchdown. So if they got all the points that were available to get there, I feel like that's, what, 11 points that were left on the table, and this would have been more in line with what we were expecting, right? That would put North Texas at 35, which is just a like 3 points short of their season average, right? Not the greatest day from the offense in terms of finishing drives, but a good day moving the ball up and down the field, right? Let's continue with the individual notices. Mason Fine, 26 to 36, 320, 2 touchdowns, that 1 interception. Torrey already mentioned 24 carries, 155 yards, a score. Nick Smith, 5 carries, 30 yards. Mason Fine scrambled for 11 yards. Jalen Guyton, 5 catches, 78 yards, no touchdowns on 7 targets. Mike Lawrence, 3 catches, 69 yards, nice. 1 touchdown on 3 targets. Cudjoe Young, 3 catches, 31 yards on 3 targets. Kelvin Smith, 3 catches, 21 yards on 4 targets. Darden, 3 catches, 17 yards on 3 targets. Rico Bussey, 2 catches, 27 yards on 6 targets. We like to throw the ball to him, and once he pulled up short, he had his hamstring kind of bother him, it looked like. It was a little play action. He was going over the top. Mason Fine missed him, but I also think Rico Bussey just kind of pulled up a little short. He limped off the field. He walked off the stadium floor, and he was seen on the sideline later, like in street clothes, and, you know, he's moving okay. So I think he'll be all right. You know, a lot of people were asking about him. But you could see that he was missed. A lot of other guys stepped up, and they did some good things. I think Quentin Jackson, he had a catch. Greg White had 2 catches, 11 yards on 4 targets. But you can see where maybe they're not at the same level just yet. The one that pops out, sticks out in my mind, was the sack. There was a sack. Mason Fine got sacked by Josiah Tawa-Efa. And it looked weird to me during the live play, and I couldn't really see too many replays, but it looked like Mason Fine was looking to his left for an outlet pass. And if you watch the play, it's a little mesh route. So the outside left receiver, you know, does a little mesh, a little short crossing route with Kelvin Smith. And they're supposed to cross paths, and you've seen this play a bunch of times. We've written about it and talked about it and screen capped it and things. The idea is that against man coverage, you know, you just cross, and then that little screen, little rub, is supposed to create an opening for one or both of the receivers. Against the zone, those guys are supposed to run to open grass and sit down and get open. So what happened was that the play began, and it looked like Greg White. I'm pretty sure it's Greg White, but it might have been Quentin Jackson. I can't. Now I'm second guessing myself right now. But he comes off, and Josiah Tua-Efa kind of spies, so he steps forward in from the linebacking spot. What should have happened is that he should have stopped and waited for the pass, but he kept with his route, and I think he was trying to get to the mesh point and then let Kelvin Smith get open into that space. Kelvin Smith was slowing down because he saw that space there and didn't want to invade it. But when he saw that his teammate was running at him, Kelvin Smith immediately tried to go run to the open space there. Whatever the case is, right? I'm not in the receiver's room. I'm not getting coached on it. But I can just tell you the general principles that I know about the play. Whatever the case is, it was not run correctly, right? Because the idea is to get somebody open. Nobody was open there. 2 guys ran to the same defender. 1 defender guarded 2. Nobody was open. Mason Fine was looking right. Because usually on those mesh plays, you're looking for the post guys, like a little corner route, or maybe they tag it with a post. Occasionally, they'll sneak a running back out there to do like a wheel route. Again, we've talked about this before. But the idea is get open. You look for the deep one. Okay, now I look for my short intermediate routes, these little mesh routes. If that's not there, I'll swing it out to the running back. So we already talked about the mesh route. One play was an open. Option one was a little corner route. Option two was the mesh, not there. Two guys run into each other. Option three should be me dumping the ball out here to Evan Johnson. But he got caught chipping the defensive end. Jordan Murray he struggled all game, right? Three holding penalties called on him. Evan Johnson was in the game, and I think he was supposed to just chip and release. That was a play. But he got caught up. I think he got stepped on, and he fell down. So Mason Fine looks left, expecting to see his running back out there as an outlet, and he's not there. And so he's rolling left, and then he's like, holy crap. And here comes Josiah Tuaefa. If you run that play again, right, and run it the way it's supposed to be run, as soon as Tuaefa steps forward, Mason Fine and is going to find his dude standing there wide open, and it's an easy completion, right? Short completion. He turns up the field, get 8 to 10 yards, right? And in an ideal world, he, you know, makes a move and runs to the house. But as it was, 1, 2, 3 things fell apart, and Mason Fine ends up sacked. That's how you get sacked, right? And a lot of people were saying, why don't we get an opener? Is Rico Bussey that important? I mean, don't we have good talented receivers? Yes, yes. Playing receiver is not all about running fast. It's not all about catching, you know, fly patterns. It's about running the routes in live game situations. It's reacting to what you're seeing, right? The air raid system relies on the receivers to see exactly what's happening in front of them and react to it. As you're moving through the defense, if you see that this guy's, you know, playing zone, you need to run a different route. If you see the guy's running man, you need to run, you know, some other route, or adjust your route, you know, in one or two predetermined ways. You can see that North Texas has not been doing that as well without their first receivers out there. And Rico Bussey has been playing amazing, right? He has 1,000 yards on the season, I believe. He crossed 1,000 last week, right? Let me look that up while I'm talking to you. But he's been good, right? And he's been playing well for this team, and you can see why he's, you know, dangerous and the number one receiver. He has 1,000 yards, yes. 12 touchdowns also. You can see why the number one guys are the number one guys, right? Bussey, Guyton, Darden, Mike Lawrence, Kelvin Smith even. And you can see why Cudjo Young, Greg White, and the guys down the roster haven't been getting as much time. Just some of it is, you know, is a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of thing. They're not getting a whole lot of time, so they're not getting a whole lot of reps in with the ones and in the games, and so then they're not able to, you know, perform at a high level, right? You know, there's only so many repetitions that anybody can get, and you got to spread them out accordingly. Right now, the ones are the ones, and we see why they're the ones. Moving on, let's talk about the defense a little bit. 400 yards allowed, 269 pass yards, 131 rush yards against the worst offense in the nation. 6.3 yards per play for UTSA, by far their best offensive day this season. And, you know, you really got to credit them for stepping up and playing well. Their dude, Greg Campbell Jr., senior day, 11 catches, 186 yards. Targeted 16 times. He was their entire receiving core, basically. Late in the game, they were targeting Tyreek Davis. And, you know, there's a limitation of that position in this defensive setup, right? That's kind of how it goes. You have a guy that's a linebacker, safety, hybrid in Tyreek Davis and Ashton Preston. That position is going to be, you know, number one on the list on who do we target with some of our receivers, right? Who's a guy that we look at and say, this is, we're going to go after? If you watched any of the West Virginia-Oklahoma game, the slot receiver, I mean, the slot corner, the safety position, that's where they're getting big yards on, right? West Virginia was throwing the ball to number 12. He was killing them out there. Same idea, right? Nobody wants to throw on Nate Brooks. Nobody wants to throw on Keemon Hall, although they did on one, and that was kind of a miracle catch. But you're not going to make a living throwing that way. All the next three catches were on Tyreek Davis. Even that final possession, it was Tyreek Davis. I think they threw it to, what was that dude, Sheldon Jones. He caught a little out route targeting Tyreek Davis. They threw it short to, I don't know, was it, I don't know who it was, Tariq Woolen or something like that. I'm trying to keep an eye on the play-by-play right here so I can speak truth to you. But the point is they threw it, they're looking at Tyreek Davis and say, where can we get yards, right? Look at Old Dominion. They targeted Tyreek Davis. They put Jonathan Duhart, best receiver, in the slot, had him go up against Tyreek Davis, and he made a catch. That's just good offensive football there, offensive planning. Obviously, Tyreek Davis is a talent, and there's a reason he has a starting gig right now, and he's played well, especially when he's playing in standard downs. What does this mean? It means North Texas needs to develop their secondary so that way they don't have a weakest link out there. And, I mean, again, this is not really a knock on Tyreek Davis because he didn't come to North Texas and he to play, you know, lockdown defensive back. Sorry, I'm misspeaking out here. You know what I'm saying? That's not what we wanted him for. We wanted him because he's a big hitter and he can stop the run. And in a pinch, right, he can defend the pass. And he's done well, right? You know, playing solid defense out there. They found something they like against him. They don't think that he can defend the slot streaks, the little slot fades, and the out routes out there. And you know what? Those are tough. We mentioned this before. I think Jameel Moore got burnt on a couple of those, and he's more of a corner type guy. I think Liberty burnt Jameel Moore on one of those. It's a tough gig playing slot corner, and especially when you're safety and you got safety build or linebacker safety or the nick build, whatever we call it. That's just a tough gig, and you know he'll improve on that. That's going to be a point of emphasis, and so we're not going to beat him up about it. Especially if number one, are you giving good effort? It looks like he's giving good effort, and you know the coaches obviously think he's giving good effort in. During the week, in practice, studying, knowing where he's supposed to be, right? Or else he wouldn't be out there. So, okay, good job there. And is it just because the guy's a little bit better than you are and you're just getting beat? That's fine. I mean, you know, that's what you want it to come down to. You want it to be that man beat your man because he's better than him, not because your guy didn't prepare, because your guy didn't know what he wanted, where he was supposed to be, et cetera, et cetera. Right, so as long as you're giving good effort, you know you're gonna be okay. And you know he does; he's a good player. You know he got beat, and that's gonna be a target right there. And he'll need to improve. He's gonna have 3 weeks or whatever it's gonna be before the bowl game. And Seth Luttrell and everybody's gonna have 3 weeks to go out there and recruit to try to get a guy that challenges him, either pushes him to be better or replaces him, right? And that's what happened to Ashton Preston, who everybody liked. He's a cool dude, but he got beat by Tyreek Davis because they like what he brings to the table a little bit more than Ashton Preston. And, you know, that's the way of things. That's football. So we'll see what happens there. But that's obviously a weakness in this defense right now. It's, a lot of teams have been finding some success throwing on Tyreek Davis, especially late. And it's worked. They found Greg Campbell on 4th and 16, right? They found Jonathan Duhart on 4th and 6 a couple weeks ago. They also hit, you know, like I said, Sheldon Jones in a little out route driving down the field. That was on Tyreek Davis. I think he had to make the tackle or was defending the three of the final passes there. And that one that Bryce Rivers missed in the end zone, that would have been a score with like 17 seconds left in the game. That was on Tyreek Davis. The ball was just high. If he puts that where it's supposed to be, Tyreek Davis is beat on that one, and that's a touchdown. Again, they're picking on him, right? He feels bad enough about it, and he's going to go into the film room, all that, whatever. So we're not going to pile on him. We're just going to point it out. Same thing with Jordan Murray. Everybody likes the kid. He works hard. Three holding penalties on the day, and that's not good. And I think he and – Alex Woodworth, right, the left guard, they were both abused on that 4th-and-1 try that failed horribly. Number one, I hated the call. And I understand the call, but I hated it. I get it. You look at your running back, 24 carries, 155 yards, averaging 6.5 yards a pop. If you just tweet those generic numbers out there and say, look, our running back's running well, 6.5 yards per carry. Why wouldn't I give him the ball and let him go get 1 yard for me? Yeah, I agree with you, but this is not 1992 football out here. And we have seen that this offensive line cannot get 1 yard when it needs to consistently. Definitely not against Conference USA competition, right? Struggled against UAB, struggled against Louisiana Tech, struggled against Old Dominion, struggled against UTSA in short yardage. And UTSA has one of the better defensive lines in the league, right? We didn't go too much into that in the preview because I thought North Texas would be able to score a lot more easily and not really get to these positions. And for the most part, that was fine, right? 17-0 lead, and you know they couldn't score from the one. It didn't really affect things too much. But when it came down to it, you can see where that can cost you a game, right? We saw that against Old Dominion. We saw that against UAB. UAB especially, right? 3 or 4 fourth-and-ones, 3rd-and-ones, just couldn't get anything going. And that cost them the game. And this one, it could have cost them the game. It put the defense back on the field, and we forced them to make a play. So, again, if you want to be like, well, Tyreek Davis needs to make a stop out there. Like, well, we need to get a first down. Because we get a first down, we can run the clock out. Tyreek Davis doesn't need to go out there and make any plays, right? We don't need EJ Ajia to get a game clinching sack, so to speak, almost, right? Brandon Garner to get a big sack, put him in 4th-and-16. We don't need those things. It would have been better if they were on the sideline the whole time and we could say, all right, we'll just run the ball out, right? Let's get DeAndre Torrey 180 yards, right? Run the last 30. The next step is getting better on the offensive line, and it's hard. Everybody wants an offensive lineman that can block well and move fluidly. It's a tough position. It's a tough position to recruit to. And it's tough because it's the basic building block of football. Mike Leach said this week, right, after their loss in the snow in the Apple Cup, if you want to boil the game down to its essential parts, it's blocking and tackling. And they were just better than us at those things. And, yeah, I say all the time on the show, you know, football is a simple game, right? It's we'll move the ball across that line, whether it's the first down marker or the end zone marker. That's the entirety of the game, right? And you do all these fancy plays. I'll fake this way, then I'll move that way, then I'll pretend like I'm going to block, and then actually the snap will go to the running back, and he'll throw the ball. But the idea is still the same. I want to get the ball across the line. By hook or by crook, right? You know, I'm going to run through you, run around you, or, you know, fake you out. Make you think I'm going left so I can go right. Also, I can get across the line, right? If you have just a bulldozer, you hand them the ball and run through people, do it. North Texas doesn't have that, right? We're not built to do that. And that's because we found that it's easier to get across the line if you can win one-on-one matchups. It's hard to tackle DeAndre Torrey in space when he has, you know, a 10-yard head start on you and, you know, 15 yards around you, and you gotta tackle them out there. It's not going to happen, as we've seen. But in a phone booth, which is what a 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1 is, it's a lot easier to tackle DeAndre Torrey, and we saw that. We got to get off those blocks better, right? We got to move the ball. And here's what I was saying, what I didn't like about that play call. Why are we doing that? We just proved that we couldn't do it. We're just going to be, you know, stubborn about this whole thing? Or is it showing that we believe in a running back and the offense or something like that? I don't know. Give the ball to Mason Fine. Let him make a play. You know? I think, you know, I forget what his numbers were on third down passing. I don't like just basically saying, let's take our best player out of the game. In this one play, because it is, you know, a little bit better. Let Mason Fine make a decision, right? As much as badly as the failure was a couple weeks ago, I was it against FAU, where North Texas lines up and we have Mason Fine running a little option play to the left. I like that because we have the ball in our best player's hands and we let him make a decision. I would much rather a little run pass option. Spread them out, you know, make UTSA guard in space. Let's throw a little screen pass. Let's do something that is not trying to run into the very talented defensive line with our questionable offensive line and our slight running back. DeAndre Torre is like what, 170 pounds or something like that. If we have Lauren Easley out there, yeah, let's do that. We don't, right? We don't have him out there. Let's try something else, please. So there's my spiel on that. I didn't like that call very much at all. What are you gonna do? I mean, sometimes get caught up in these things. I hopefully with 3 weeks to prepare before the bowl game, they can figure out what that is. I'm sure that's a glaring error on their part. But also, you know, they're probably trying to stick to their guns. Like, I mean, we talked about short yardage. We got to get better. But I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you coach that up. You know, sometimes you just need time and more practice. You know, maybe you just need new guys out there. At the end of the season, you are who you are. I kind of got off track there. The defense played well. For the most part, they played well. They got beat on some big plays, especially late, and that was not good. If the offense was, you know, more efficient the way we expected them to be, this game is more of a blowout and we allowed UTSA 21 than a close game. North Texas scoring 24 is not going to do it. We need 31 points from this offense every week. Or I'll call it a disappointment. And so it was a disappointment. Great moving the ball up and down the field. Not great putting yards into touchdowns, right? We need points. UTSA, apparently they had a different offensive coordinator. They had their wide receiver coach, their pass game coordinator calling the plays. Jeff Castle, looks like, not Al Borges. And I bet that changed up some things, caught the defense off guard, saw some looks that they hadn't seen before. And Bryce Rivers, he played one game, or two games, I believe, this season. Not a whole lot of tape on the guy. And, you know, he had a little bit of surprise for everybody. I mean, a lot of it was him just throwing to Greg Campbell. And some of it were just great plays by Greg Campbell and just some luck from Bryce Rivers. But he was super calm out there, right? He was just chill. Never got panicked, even though North Texas was hitting him, beating him up. He was standing tall and making plays. I think I said that on Twitter, and he liked that, so I guess he agrees. What does all that mean? Well, it means that Bryce Rivers is a decent quarterback. And, you know, I mean, you never know. I don't want to crown him anything. Like I said, I made mention of that 2014 season. Tucker Carter from UTSA stepped in and had a good game, but then he was not very good the other games, right? Andrew McNulty had a good game in that one, and, you know, a lot of people were over-crowning him, and he didn't perform so well the following season. You never know what you're going to get. You know, one game does not mean a whole lot, and you need to see some more consistency before, you know, you can make anything of anything there. But in a game, in one game, you can jump up and surprise some teams. So I don't feel bad for our defense, you know, getting sliced up for 269 yards. In modern college football, 269 is nothing. It's not that big of a deal. 320 is a solid game, right? That's Mason Fine. 300 yards passing is a good game. 400, 500 yards, those are bad if you're a defense. So 20 of 32, 269, one touchdown, one interception. I can live with that. Let's not hype up this dude like he was Tony Romo out there. You know, he wasn't. So good job on the defense. Allowed too many run plays, I thought, but, you know, solid play all the way around. This is a weird game again. It's a rivalry game, sort of, right? I think it's a rivalry game. Some people don't. It's getting to be that point. There was not a whole lot of people there. The whole atmosphere of the Alamo Dome is weird. They play a bunch of arena music. It's kind of dead. You're trying to get hype. And like Seth and Shaw said, he was worried about the seniors from the other team trying to play well and show out. There was that factor there. And there's a little bit of that whole same old North Texas, right? Oh, we're doing it again. 72-point lead. Oh, we're going to do it again. And it kind of creeps into your mind and, you know, messes you up. I don't know if that was the cause of some of the miscues, right? There was a fair catch interference. There was a blocked punt allowed. And then, you know, there was a couple fourth down. Like, on the goal line right before the half, before UTSA scored their 14th point, North Texas had them. They had them, like, dead to rights. And they let him slip through and he scored. And there was some confusion there. You could see the back look behind him and say, what am I supposed to do instead of just reacting? And I guess you can say, good job, UTSA, right? Just applaud them for putting our guys in a position to be confused and then making them confused. Or you could be like, what are we doing? We need to know our assignments, right? I think it's a little bit of both. The play before that, UTSA tried some trickery. The quarterback stepped out and he was acted like he was pointing, directing traffic. It was a direct snap, and then the running back threw it and missed his the jump pass. A little fortune there, right? You'd rather be fortunate than good. Okay. You're not in that position if you don't get your punt blocked and the defense doesn't have to defend, you know, a short field. I don't really blame them for that. They held them. The UTSA scored on fourth down or whatever it was. Not a win, but, you know, a good effort, right? A lot of weird things in this game. It's an accumulation of all these little things that adds up to, hey, we snuck by 24-21. We didn't blow them out. It's not any one of those things. Again, hey, 516 yards of offense, but only 24 points. Well, what happened there? There was a lot of good, but in key moments, you know, they failed to convert. Defense, well, there's a few sacks. What was it? Three sacks, I think it was. Wow, that was a great sack. Great job. Good job, defense. Well, how did you let 400 yards, right? We allowed big. We got them to 4th and 16, but then we allowed them to convert to 4th and 16. Things like that. Ultimately, a win is a win, and you have to win these kinds of games. You can get too detailed on one or two of these things. But you're going to get presented with these kinds of games, and you have to find a way out of them. And North Texas is a good team. They have been playing well and have been beating bad teams all season. They've gotten to, you know, hairy situations, but they beat Rice. Right? They were a little too close with Rice and pulled away. A little too close with Southern Miss, pulled away. They've only, trailed by 8 all season or something like that? I think I saw somebody tweet that. And that's only Alabama, Clemson, North Texas. And for the competition we played, you know, we've done a good job. The only bad loss was the Old Dominion loss, I thought. And even then, like I said before, Old Dominion has been underperforming all season. That they're like a volcano, right? That you expected to explode but hadn't. But it had a little mini eruption against us, right? Same thing against Virginia Tech. They jumped up and bit somebody. Old Dominion can jump up and you know, bite somebody because they have all that talent. They can also lay an egg like they did this weekend against Rice. You got to treat them respectfully. That's what, you know, it's coach speak again, right? Got to treat any opponent like they can beat you because they can. They're good players over there. They have good players, good coaches. Those are all important points, and you can see that here in this UTSA game. I don't know what it is that made them the worst offense in the nation, right? They had Jalen Rhodes is a good running back. We've seen him do things. We've seen the receivers make plays. Supposedly they're all very talented, right? 3-star guys, right? There's a lot of talent everywhere. So why are they not playing well, right? Why was the defense allowing 45 and 52 and whatever the case was, in the previous weeks? I don't know. Obviously they made some changes, right? Maybe it was motivation, right? Senior day. Maybe it was play calling, right? Okay, we changed the guy calling the plays. Maybe it was playing North Texas and remembering what happened last season. Maybe it was a realization that, hey, we're at home for the final time this season. We gotta do better than what we have been doing, right? I don't know. Any of those things can make a bad team into a decent team, and I think that's what we saw. UTSA was still bad on the day, and they only scored 21 points. And, they only got 400 yards on a desperation final drive. And, you know, they missed a kick. Because that was just all bad. All those things happen. North Texas played a solid game, not their best game, but got a win, right? Defense stepped up, and the offense scored enough to get the win. Let's talk about some speculation now. Bowl game, where are we going? Everything I see and read in here says they were going to the First Responders Bowl. The Surf Pro one, the former Heart of Dallas Bowl. I don't know. I don't know if that's the best bowl for us to go to. But we don't get to choose those kinds of things at this point. Really, anything can happen. And just as a reminder, if you win the conference title game, right? If you're UAB or Middle Tennessee, that's crazy. That's going to be in held in Murfreesboro. And you win, you don't get to choose your bowl. You have a preference. You say, hey, Conference USA, I'd really like to go to New Orleans. And they say, okay, we'll see what we can do. We'll work with the New Orleans Bowl, see if we can make that happen. And, you know, it kind of flows from there. But the bowl games and the TV, you know, people, meaning ESPN, get to have a large say in who goes where, right? So they're like, we don't want this matchup. We'd like this to be a little bit better. And the conference will send, you know, seven win teams over 6-win teams, that kind of deal. The league, I think what that means is like Southern Miss is going to be kind of hoping and praying. But Southern Miss is a good program that I think a lot of bowls like. They like their traveling abilities. I don't know where they rank North Texas on the ability to travel. We didn't turn up so well at the New Orleans Bowl, I don't think. You know, who knows what happens there. But we do turn up at the Heart of Dallas Bowl, which counterintuitively is bad for the Heart of Dallas Bowl or the Surf Pro Bowl or whatever you want to call it right now. Because nobody goes up there and buys hotel rooms, right? I mean, you all live in the area, so you just, you know, walk on over to the Cotton Bowl and then go home, which makes it super convenient for you there. You know, was it 38,000? And then there was like 40,000, I think, the other time. We were there against Army. And, you know, so if, I know if we play like a BYU, I saw that one projection, like a BYU, we're going to get a bunch of North Texas people there, and it's going to be a fun time. It's going to be great. But maybe not so great for the bowls because, you know, everybody just in the area. The problem with the league's bowl, what is the word? The bowl relationships at this point is that they're all the early bowls, like the December 14th, the earliest bowls that you can get. It makes it really hard to figure out where you're going to go, plan accordingly, and get out there. And they're not in the most convenient spots, right? Hawaii's great, but it's in Hawaii. The other one, the Bahamas Bowl, great bowl for the players to go to. Very difficult to get a contingent of fans out there in any kind of significance numbers, right? New Orleans, that's a little bit more reasonable, but again, it's kind of early. It's kind of hard to just, you know, crank out a trip that quick. Maybe you could kind of do it like around the holidays, right? If it's like, you know, December 27th, that kind of thing. But there's none of those. It doesn't happen. Heart of Dallas Bowl or the Surf Bowl, First Responders Bowl is the 26th. A little easier to get to, but I mean, by then you probably already made some Christmas plans, right? That's all. It was hard to get a large contingent. That's why you need like a giant fan base, right? Because if you're going to say only 10% of people can and will travel to this bowl, well, 10% of like 5 million is a lot of people, right? 10% of, you know, 100,000 is not a whole lot of people. All that said, it was a solid turnout given the stakes here in San Antonio. But that's a game that you're like, we should get a better contingent out here. I think there were more people at the Rice game last year in Houston than there were at this one. And I know everybody had, you know, the reasons. Well, you know, we had a this, that, and the other. But maybe slightly disappointing. I don't know. The band was there. That was cool. I think that North Texas and UTSA and El Paso and Rice, they all do a good job trying to make sure that they get everybody traveling to these in-state games. Because I think that's how you build up a good league, is having close opponents, right? And making it as good of an atmosphere as you can at every time. It was cool seeing both bands there, even though it was just a traveling band for North Texas. It was good to see them there. They're playing. You know, they got the crowd hyped. Seeing the flag guy run on the field, kind of swing it in everybody's face. That was cool. That was fun. Good times. Makes for better entertainment and good atmosphere in Conference USA, which is what we want. Let's speculate about Seth Luttrell now. This morning, Texas Tech fired Cliff Kingsbury, and Larry Fedora was fired at North Carolina. Seth Luttrell coached at both places as an assistant. He obviously had the most success at North Carolina, right? He was offensive coordinator, assistant head coach, and they got to a ACC championship game. At Texas Tech, he was part of those Mike Leach teams that that got to number one. They were ranked number one, right? In 2008, obviously Graham Harrell was a part of that. He was the one throwing the passes and things. Our whole staff right now has strong ties to Texas Tech. And, you know, a lot of easy linkages there. Like, South Latrell's doing good. Texas Tech just fired the coach. South Latrell goes to Texas Tech, right? I don't know. I mean, obviously it would be a pay raise, I think, for a good number of the guys on the team. Graham Harrell, I think, would be – it's an easy homecoming there. I think Graham Harrell's at the point in his career where he would be an offensive coordinator at a P5 or maybe a head coach at a lower G5 at this point. But you don't know. And then also, how's the brass at Texas Tech going to take hiring yet another offensive guru to be their head coach? I don't know. Cliff Kingsbury didn't have any experience as a head coach, but he did have experience as an offensive coordinator, right? So there's one step up there for Seth Luttrell, right? He has been a head coach, and he has proven that he can get wins here. You know, he got North Texas to a conference championship game, and he's produced really good offenses here at North Texas. So that's an easy sell, I think, for them. North Carolina, Seth Luttrell going there, that's an easy sell. Again, hey, you were here, you know what it's like, you know what it's like in their best days, you know what works here, you know how to recruit here, come here, we give you a raise, you get a raise your profile, go out there and compete with like the Clemsons of the world, right? North Texas should have a short list, right? Ren Baker should have a short list of coaches that he's looking at, and maybe even the hiring firms that he wants to hire to get these coaches. You know, I think that's the right way to do it. You don't want to just, you can have a short list and lead your own search, but that can, you can run into trouble that way if you're not doing it the right way. There's a right way to search for coaches, and search firms are supposed to do it the right way. I think like anything, the quality varies. Anyway, I don't know. There's a lot of names thrown out right now. I think a lot of people like Eric Morris. At UIW, he led the Cardinals to a 6-2 record in conference. Got a share of the Southland Conference title game. They lost in the first round of the FCS playoffs. But that team is even newer than UTSA's, right? And that was all really impressive, right? He staffed his staff with a bunch of young guys that had won at D3 and D2 schools. So I think he's poised for success, and he probably is going to, you know, be there for a year or two. But if I don't know, Texas Tech taps him on the shoulder, why would he not make that jump? If North Texas, would North Texas be interested in Eric Morris? I don't know. I mean, same kind of lineage, same kind of deal. I think going with an air raid, Mike Leach tree kind of guy is the right way to do it. You don't lose a whole lot, and you keep some of the same philosophy. I think figuring out a guy that manages the same way as Seth Luttrell does is the way to go, right? He's super calm. He keeps it. He values his assistants, that kind of thing. That's all speculation. Right now, Seth Luttrell is still the head coach at North Texas, and right now he should be out there getting ready to go recruit. And, you know, until he's not the head coach, you know, We'll act like he is the head coach. but all that is to say that we're gonna have to think about this soon. Seth Luttrell is in demand, and we only want him to become more in demand, right? You win, you keep winning, you get looked at, you get coveted by other programs. It's just the way it goes, especially at this level. But it happens all the way at, you know, to P5 schools. Like, you know, a North Carolina job is not an Alabama job. A Minnesota job is not a Michigan job, right? There's always a step up until the very top of the top. And even then, there's even some programs that have fallen down by the wayside but still have a prestige and a cachet that can, you know, sway you, right? Like USC's down, but USC's a great job. Florida State is down. Florida State's a great job. Miami, same thing. Those kinds of programs, they have an allure that can get almost any head coach, right? Except ones that are just super established. By the way, apparently Mack Brown is in the running for the North Carolina job, returning to North Carolina. We'll see what happens. Right now, Seth Schell's the head coach. I don't know where anybody can go. We might see Graham Harrell be in the running at Texas State, but Texas State is not really a stable situation at this point in time. I saw some weird stuff about Ties, the AD right now, the way that they run their program, the whole trainer issues, guys going out with concussions, and I don't know if that's a program that you want to walk into and say, yeah, I'll put my reputation on the line and try to win football games out here while the AD is under fire. You don't want that kind of thing. The great part about North Texas at this point in time is that everybody's pulling in the same direction, and as far as we can tell, there's none of that internal political fighting, right? Ren Baker, Seth Luttrell, and Neil Smastrisk all get along, and you know, that's, I don't want to say it's priceless, but there's a lot of head coaches that would give a good portion of their salary to have some of that in their front offices, right? With that said, let's get ready for this bowl game, and let's turn our attention a little bit towards basketball. Not in this show, but coming up soon. Basketball team's undefeated. They haven't played the strongest competition at this point, but they're balling. Everything looks good. They got Roosevelt Smart back from injury. Emoji Gibson looks good right now. Zachary Simmons is doing his Tyson Chandler impression. The women's team, Terrielle Bradley scored 40 points. She's getting buckets out there for the women's team. They're not undefeated, but they look fun. Good times on the basketball front. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Mean Green Nation podcast. Thank you for listening. Leave a review on iTunes. Give us your feedback. We love it. We like interacting with all the people that listen to our fellow diehard, fellow crazy Mean Greeners. We appreciate it. Aldo should be back next time once he's recovered. You know, so we didn't kick him off or nothing like that for conduct unbecoming. But yeah, he should be back next time. And, you know, so if you want to say anything to him, you can just email again, podcastmeangrynation.com. You know, we'll read it all together by the fire someplace. Good times. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening. Go Mean Green.